Welcome and good morning. You're listening to Conversations on WDRT 91.9 FM, our local community radio in Viroqua, Wisconsin. You can listen to this program streaming, and it will be in the archives. So this morning, I have three guests. We have Gail Free from the Viroqua Cemetery Association. He's president. Kathy Dorfer from the Driftless Green Burial Alliance, and Kelly Whited Ford, also from the Driftless Green Burial Alliance. And you're also members of the Threshold Care Circle, which more people might know about because that organization has been going for a while. And today we are going to talk about what led up to this new development where these organizations are collaborating to build and create a green burial site in the Viroqua Cemetery. So congratulations on getting this interesting and very, advanced kind of thinking going in our community. Now a lot of questions, a lot of people can wonder about it. How's it going to be? When can I know, when can we use it? All of that. So we'll cover that, some of the history and then the particulars. We'll get to that. So let's see. We're going to give some time for each of our guests to tell a little bit about themselves and how they got into this situation or, into this project while you're collaborating. Gail, let's start with you.
Well, thank you, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a early experience with death in the family. My mother passed away unexpectedly when I was 8 years old. So to help us cope with that, the family volunteered to work at the cemetery to be close to Mom. And that still is with me. And cemetery's always had a special place in my heart. And we moved down here in 91 to start working for the county under solid waste and recycling management. And recycling is all, both of those issues are environmentally connected, so the green burial was a real good fit for me as part of the cemetery association.
Very interesting. That's really interesting about working for the cemetery so you can be close to your mom.
Cemetery is a very peaceful place when you're out there in the middle of the night working.
Yeah. When I was young, our cemetery in our little town, which was more like the size of Westby, was almost visible. It was kind of over a lot, the skating rink, the highway, and then there was the cemetery. Mm. And that, too, was, there was a large family plot. Or let's say I come from a large family that had a large family. So there are areas for my uncles and aunts and grandparents, and we did a lot of work over there getting ready for Memorial Day or getting in certain times of the year. Us kids, we'd be sent over there, clean out around the graves, make sure everything is good. So it was a comfortable place for us also growing up.
So you had a family plot there?
Yeah, in our family, my sister, I had a sister who died before I was born. So that was the first, that little child's grave. And then my parents bought plots for themselves around that.
Mm-hmm.
But they also had a place for my grandparents nearby, mm-hmm. and then my uncle and aunt and that family. So it was, they didn't have large tombstones or anything, and it wasn't demarcated by a fence or anything like that. It was very, very natural, very just small town cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
But the people in those days did buy their plots, and so yeah, it was like that. I think you see it here in the Viroqua Cemetery, kind of the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You can see.
Yeah, years ago it was more common that grandpa would buy a plot for the entire family.
Well, maybe that's what happened.
Yeah, and we have instances where there's family plots where there's a couple graves haven't been used and the plot was purchased well over 100 years ago, so we're looking into what to do with those particular plots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did those have curbing around them? Is that some kind of a boundary?
No, there's no boundaries. Mm. It's usually a family stone in the middle and then smaller stones mm-hmm. to acknowledge the other family members that had passed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kathy, how about you? Do you?
Well, when my grandmother died, we had a funeral at the church. We all went to the cemetery, and there's a little service at the chapel there. And I just had in my head that we were all going to go to the gravesite together and have, you know, a few words and see her body being lowered into the grave. And I was just so, like, shocked when everyone just left and left her body there in the chapel, and then the cemetery workers, you know, would handle the rest of it. And it just, I was just so, I just wanted to honor her, you know, by seeing her completing that process.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just, it really affected me. And then when my mom died, I made a point to the funeral directors that I wanted us to be there when her body was lowered. And so we got to the cemetery and, you know, said a few words. And then the funeral director said, and now everyone, you know, just meet at the funeral home for the luncheon. And I was just, I couldn't believe that he didn't honor he didn't listen to what I had asked. So I just stood up and said, I'm just going to stay. And then the rest of the family, almost everybody just stayed and watched that. So I don't know, it just feels like families, it's really important to me to have some kind of involvement and control over the process. You know, we've just handed everything over to experts and professionals, and to me, I just want to be more a part of saying goodbye process. It's just something that's really important to me. And I heard something about green burial over the years, and it was actually after my mom died that we got involved with that. The Threshold Care Circle began shortly after that experience. So just the whole idea of being with our loved ones after they've died and tending their bodies and, you know, being part of this, the goodbye process just is really important to me. And from the beginning of Threshold Care Circle, every time we do a presentation, the most questions that people have are about green burial. They really want to know about green burial. Mm. So that's how we sort of got involved with, you know, researching that, and have been, you know, at it for several years and
a number of years, right?
Yeah, about 10. About 10. For about mm-hmm. 10 years, yeah. Just very thrilled and excited that Gail and the Cemetery Association Board is interested in really, you know, wanting to move forward with this. It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Kelly?
Well, I wasn't a morbid child, but I did always have this vision of how I wanted to be buried. And that was very simply in a pine box having the opportunity for a tree to be buried on my grave. And I thought, simple, you know, simple. I'm very simple person, and I wanted to go out simply as well. And lo and behold, that was harder said than done. I started researching why and how and where is it done, you know, and that just brought up that's what started me on this journey, I guess. And when I took one of the first Threshold Care Circle workshops for caring for your loved ones after death, and And that was my question right away was, but okay, so you're telling us how we can do the cremation, and that's cool, but where can we be buried, you know, and naturally? And it just seemed like it was the next step to caring for our loved ones and then seeing them through, like Kathy said, through the entire process of burying them naturally. And I've had several deaths in our family recently, or in the last several years, and the graveside service is almost non-existent at this point. The committal service, what used to be a committal service, and now it's very brief, and it's pretty much. I mean, it's not very helpful, I guess, in the grieving process of the family. And green burial can provide more a family interaction and more time for those that service, that graveside service, to be more personal to the person who died, and just gives the family more control, I guess. So anyways, so all of that really helped me want to devote more of my time to developing this for our community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what I have noticed in my thought process myself over the last 20 years of being here and caring for people who are dying and thinking about cremation and thinking about all these things is I'm noticing that, you know, there's just been this sweep of awakening around these topics nationally, for sure, and I'm probably around the world, but for sure nationally, how we have gotten engaged with caring for our loved ones while they journey on their terminal process towards death. That's been that in itself was a huge obstacle or something to overcome, something for people to get comfortable with. And yeah, cremation seemed like a better next step. But then as we found out more about that and the amount of, you know, resources that takes and everything, this is the next progression of thought, largely because of this environmental issue too, and the naturalness and this completion of the journey being so important all the way out to the land, right?
Yeah, returning to the cycle of life.
Yeah, and maybe that's part of it too, is that when people have an idea that there is this cycle of life, then the whole death and death process can become something that we can incorporate and make meaning for in our lives and our grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just integrates the whole process of life and death.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this is a good time for me to take a little station break and to remind people that we're listening to Conversations. My name is Mary Christensen. I'm the host this morning, and we're talking about green burial and about green burial being prepared to happen here in Viroqua. And the guests today are Gail Free and Kathy Dorfer and Kelly Whited Ford, all of whom have been part of a group of people to bring this to fruition. And you're listening to WDRT 91.9 FM in Viroqua. So let's move on to that, what was happening this summer in getting what happened before the announcement or the public meeting in July, you three were involved in a training. Gail, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, we took a 12-week master class for green burials, and it was put on by very educated professionals who had a lot of knowledge about green burials. And it really helped me get over the hump because, like the general public, I had a lot of questions and a lot of concerns, and it just answered all those questions. It was a very involved course. It had discussions. It had videos and up to, like, 30 reading assignments with every weekly course. So it took a lot of work, but it was done in winter when I had time to keep up with it. And that got me over the hump, and we started working together, and we have a very natural site for it at the cemetery. It's pretty much a natural meadow. It's separate from the conventional burial site, but very close to it. It has established grasses as a meadow, and it's just a good site. It's got the right soils. It's an organic soil site, so it has a lot of active live bacteria to help with decomposition and the organisms needed to break down any chemicals. And it's a loamy clay soil, which is the best natural filter in the world that binds up anything that you don't want to continue down into the groundwater. It's a very safe site, and we're very fortunate to have that.
It's pretty amazing, right?
It's very amazing. We have been part, our thinking all along is that we, as the Driftless Green Burial Alliance, has been that we would acquire some land, that we somebody would donate some land. We found out in our, you know, research that you need to have 20 acres of land to start a cemetery. We always had in mind that somehow or another we would acquire the land. And then a little over a year ago, we reached out to Gail, and we were just so excited that they were interested and open to this possibility. So we started meeting with them, and the whole starting a cemetery is a huge project, and it's such a relief that we're not going to have to do that and run it. And it's just a wonderful collaboration with the cemetery here in town. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful site.
And did you have experience with another green burial site to start making it seem more, I don't know, just more concrete, more important, like the one near Madison that people talk about?
No, Natural Paths.
Yeah.
We've had an interaction with Natural Path Sanctuary, which is part of the Farley Center down in Verona, Wisconsin. We've done workshops with them, and we've taken tours. The past director came in and was part. He sat on our. We did a. I think it was in 2013, Kathy, something like that. We did a. We sponsored a panel discussion on green burial in Wisconsin, and he sat on that panel, and then when we decided that we really wanted to look into green burial options for this area, for the Driftless area, more, you know, to make it more of a point of threshold care circle and a mission of threshold care circle. We contacted Kevin and picked his brain extensively. He was very, very gracious to us and kept saying to us, "It's a lot of work. It probably won't work. You probably won't be able to get it done because it's you know, like I going back to how I envisioned my own burial when I was a little girl. You know, it's not that simple. It's just not that simple unless you have land. If you have land that you can be buried on, it is that simple. You know, you can just be buried on your land in Wisconsin, anyways. You have to look at the county regulations, but most counties don't have any regulations against burial on your own land. So, lost the train of thought there.
No, but I didn't because this was, you and I talked about this in preparing for today, and that is a very important part because it makes this process available to everyone. Right. It isn't just a land owner's right to be buried this naturally.
Right.
But it's open to everyone, which is a very important, I think, aspect of this.
Yeah, it's very important. A lot of we're aware of some folks who you travel to, you know, two hours away to have their loved one buried naturally at the Farley Center. Mm-hmm. So it'll be amazing to have that option right here.
Right. And not everyone has the resources to do that.
Not everyone does.
Right.
That's right.
So I think that's one thing that Driftless Green Burial Alliance and the Viroqua Cemetery Association have in common, one of many, is that we're here to serve the community. And no matter what the, you know, your income levels, your religious affiliations, you know, what have you, we're here to serve you, you know, to serve all of us.
Right. And the Cemetery Association sees offering green burial as gives us the ability to serve the entire community, which is very important that we serve everyone.
It's very much in keeping with my feeling about this area in general. And that is that, yeah, the land is something that binds us together, but so does community and the care for the whole community. There's a kind of a reverence in a certain way for that. What doesn't play out the same for everybody, but I think overall we can see that. That is really a common thread.
Right. And one of the issues that we have with a lot of the green cemeteries that are being developed now, they've become almost, they're cost prohibitive, you know, is a nice way of saying it. And that's one of the things that the association, they want to make sure that the burial cost is comparable to what it is right now for a conventional burial, which is very reasonable. Correct, Gail?
Yes. And the big part of this, you mentioned community, and that's a large part of this development process, because some of the green burial sites that I've researched are very stringent on their rules, and we want to set rules that fit the community and the community's values. Mm-hmm. And family is a very important structure in this community, and we want to be able to serve a family, not just each individual in a separate spot.
Yeah, that goes back to a long history of people, you know, like we talked about.
So you want to be able to, within the green cemetery, to be able to offer like family plots.
Yeah, maybe I should expand on that a little bit.
Yeah.
Most green cemeteries have just sequential burying. One, if you need a site, you get the next one in line. Well, we would do that. When you purchase a plot, you're not going to be assigned a plot at that time. But if you purchase a husband and wife plot or a family plot, at the time of the first burial, that'll trigger where that family plot will be, and then the additional purchase sites would be marked off so that a husband and wife and a family can be buried in the same place, which is a little unusual, but if you want to support a family, I think that's very important.
Yeah, I do too.
Good.
Very nice. It just made me think of how my husband's father was a veteran, so he's buried in a veteran's cemetery up in the Fort Snelling. And, and his wife has one next to him. And I thought that was really great that they could do that, that she could go there too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Has some of that in it. Yeah. So what is your next step, Gail, at the association?
Well, we've already hired a landscape architect who specializes in green burial layout and long-term planning. That is our first big step. And then we have some site prep to do. after we deal with him. We've got a pretty good idea what we want to do, but he can streamline it and make it more professional.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have to clean some brush out and create a walking path. And after that, the actual marking out of the plots, and then with the help of a surveyor, get them identified and put on a computer map. And then this winter, our biggest task is to come up with all the operating rules of how we're going to do this. And I want to start quite conservatively, because what we start with is pretty much what people have to deal with for the next few hundred years. And you can always loosen up your requirements a little bit, but you can't tighten them down very easy. So this is going to be a lot of thought. I've been thinking about this probably for the last 6 months and have a pretty good start on it, but I'm to the point now that I'm going to start distributing that to a committee. We're forming a committee to work on green burial rules.
Mm-hmm.
And
who would be on that committee?
It'll be the local funeral directors. Mm-hmm. All three of them have agreed and very supportive, I may add. And it'll be the Driftless Green Burial Alliance, the entire Cemetery Association, and a couple members of the public. I don't expect to have a lot of meetings where everybody has to attend, because who can make it can come, but it gives me an opportunity to distribute all the information we are creating to people that look at it in a whole different light than what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And add their suggestions and hopefully prevent us from making some mistakes in the future.
Mm-hmm. I thought it sounds very sensible, really sensible, because then you have all your different entities, different perspectives at the table.
Correct.
Yeah, that's great.
Members of the committee will think of things that I would never stumble across.
Right. Right, because we all have our different experiences, too, with
Absolutely.
Burials from childhood to all the way through. We can remember all that. That sounds really great. And then what is next for the Green Burial Alliance, the Driftless Green Burial Alliance?
Well, we've launched a fundraising campaign
Okay.
to hire the landscape architect, and also to pay for some legal work that needs to be done for the surveying, to do some plantings. The cemetery operates on a pretty tight budget, and so we've taken that piece of the project on.
Mm-hmm.
So we put out, we've got a
campaign.
Campaign going.
Going. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, so It's a fundraising campaign that you can, if you want to learn more about that, or if you possibly would like to donate, you can do that by going to thresholdcarecircle.org, and there's a button right on the homepage that will take you to the campaign and explain more about what's it for and what we're hoping to accomplish. And
people could also write out a check and send it to you.
They can also write out a check and send it to make the check out to Driftless Burial.
Driftless Green Burial Alliance.
Thank you.
DGBA.
DGBA. That's even easier. Much easier. And send it to our office, which you'll find on the website if you go to the website. And then we're also having a fundraiser with Sittin' Pretty Farms, the pizza fundraiser, the last pizza night of the season is on the October 14th, and it's Threshold Care Circle will be serving you if you come. and playing music. There's Tracy Mangle and Shar Elderkin are both musicians and both part of Threshold Care Circle, and they will be playing together.
I would like to talk a little bit about our budget.
Mm-hmm.
It's virtually non-existent. The cemetery is well over 40 acres, and when the crew gets done mowing the last section, especially this summer, the way the grass grew, they just had to go and start over. It's a lot of work. Most people don't realize how much work it takes to keep a cemetery up and looking as beautiful as we try to keep ours. And throughout history, the cemetery many, many times were in financial trouble and ready to declare bankruptcy. And the biggest issue is our perpetual care. We plant over 6,000 flowers every spring, and that's very expensive. But we just have to keep going. And if the cemetery goes bankrupt, then the city has to take it over. And I think you would lose a little bit of the connection to the public if it's not done by volunteers, if it's done by city staff.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the costs would go up substantially. But the last time that we got in real trouble financially and considered giving it back to the city was just prior to when we opened in 2004, the new Section 5 and 6. A lot of people pre-bought cemetery lots at that time because it was all new. And that kept us going. The fact that ever since 2008, the interest on our perpetual care hasn't amounted to much at all. Mm. And that is supposed to be our main funding mechanism to keep the cemetery going. And we lost like $20,000-$25,000 of interest revenue ever since that time, which really puts us behind the eight ball on funding.
Mm-hmm.
So being that we do not have any funding, we're in a tough situation again this year with all the work we have done with trees with our staff. We're way over budget on labor. But we actually are creating a green burial checkbook,
mm-hmm.
just to keep everything clean and to keep it separate so that we are open book to the public saying this is what it's costing, this is what we're spending the money on. It's not intermingled with our other funds, but that in alone creates a challenge for green burial because mm-hmm. we don't have that cushion. So that's where the fundraiser is very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it sounds very smart to do it that way, because a lot of times if we as individuals have all of our assumptions about money and how they are spending it, and how and so when things are transparent and open, it gives us, you know, confidence, awareness. We can participate, say, oh, well, I could do something there to help with that, and it helps spread the burden around the community, which it should if we want this to be a community enterprise. I mean, to serve the community.
Correct.
Yeah, so, and you mentioned all the trees, and I remember being at that July meeting and hearing about the trees, which I probably should have read about in the paper, but I didn't know about it. But, yeah, there was a need to take down a lot of trees because of a disease, and then there's a need to replant to keep our cemetery really beautiful. So that was that's an area where people can donate to the cemetery, a tree, or the cost of a tree, or something. It's just
for $250, you can sponsor a tree,
yeah.
to be replanted at the cemetery.
Mm-hmm. And that's just an ongoing thing now for the yeah. while all those trees get dealt with.
And right now, I have a 3x4 black granite plaque at the engraver,
uh-huh.
that's going to go up with the names of the people who donated the tree and who they are honoring with their donation, and that'll go up by the gate, mm-hmm. hopefully in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Great.
That's nice.
Well, I think I should take another little station break here. You're listening to Conversations, here on WDRT, Viroqua. It's our local community station at 91.9 FM. And also you can stream the programs and all programs, the radio, at WDRT.org. This program will be in the archives in a week or two, and it will be available soon after you hear it this morning. We are talking about Green Burial, the Driftless Green Burial Alliance, and the Viroqua Cemetery Association. Their collaboration to be creating a 20-acre site for green burial at the Viroqua Cemetery, and the steps that have been taken and what's going to be happening, and how we're going to afford this, and how the community can all be involved in it. Before I get back into the conversation, I wanted to acknowledge and urge listeners to join or to follow the Driftless Green Burial Alliance on Facebook. You get a lot of information. They're posting wonderful interviews and news about this, but also how this is a movement, really. There are lots of articles and interviews and films being made all across the country as this topic is evolving in our bigger culture. And also the Threshold Care Circle has a Facebook page and a website, thresholdcarecircle.org. And the Viroqua Cemetery also has a website. It's called viroquacemetery.com. And that's a great place for you to find Gail's contact information. And as the project evolves, there will be more content going up there so people can understand. But at least you can get, know where to get the information, know where to help out or find the information you need as you do your own planning, which Threshold Care Circle started a lot of us doing in the mid-2000s when we attended workshops and things like that. So we were talking about the fundraisers, but is there anything else that you want to talk about?
Well, you mentioned planning.
Yeah.
That is so important, no matter what option you choose for mm-hmm. your final resting place. I mean, I've had families call me in the middle of the night saying, oh, my dad just passed away, and this is in the middle of winter when the ground is 3 feet deep of frost. And I says, well, tell me where the plot is, and I'll start thawing it out. And they said, well, we don't have a plot.
Oh.
And that puts so much stress on the immediate family that is unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Planning for the inevitable is very important, and it just makes it so much easier on the family if at least you have your site picked out.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not even purchased, have an area where you know you want to be, and it just speeds everything up because time is short when a person passes. It takes 24 hours at least to thaw out the land, and then it takes another day to dig it, and if there's a lot of snow to move, that all adds to it. It helps the family and it helps the cemetery staff if there's some planning done ahead of time.
Hmm. I hadn't thought about how long it takes to thaw out the land. But I know from experience, even having attended the workshop about planning for, like Tamara Slayton was here, and it was the year 2000, because that's the year that my mom, I brought her here for respite care for a month. And so this theme was pretty big on my mind. And the little packet of information she gave out, it was about planning for your own death. That's the the theme of that weekend, and one of them was to fill out your death certificate. That was really shocking. How old are you going to be? What year is it going to be? You know, and all of that. You know, it's like really,
a lot easier
really
if
we, got us
you
going.
Knew if we knew the date.
Right. But we, you know, and had that, well, think about it, you know. Anyway, and it went on from that. But I have to say, I still don't have my final wishes booklet totally filled out. And well, it's that long.
That's okay. You know, we always say to fill it out with a pencil. Because it always changes, and you might not care, you know, about certain things for years, and then all of a sudden it becomes that particular thing becomes important to you, and so then that would be the time to fill that portion out, you know. It's a living document, my final wishes, you know, and it's always changing,
right, and. Like now I would erase cremation and put this there, you know, but anyway, it's just really interesting. But so the Threshold Care Circle has this little booklet that Char put together, right?
Well, Charlene,
everybody?
People did.
Kathy Neidert.
Okay. But it's called My Final Wishes. It's a little booklet, and in it is so great because you even list the people who need to be notified. Just, you know, particular, like these physical details, like how to handle, but also what you think about, what's important for the ambiance, whether you want a vigil or not, and who should be helping to take care and set that up. It's really a great document to walk through and fill out.
And it's not just for people who are doing home burial or home funerals. I mean, there's a part in there of question of what funeral director, what funeral home do you want us to contact with, or where have you made your arrangements? If you have purchased a plot in a cemetery, where is that? You know, and the main thing is to make it to leave a document that the people that you leave behind can access and use to make your wishes a reality, you know. And so it's a wonderful gift to give your loved ones. I was very thankful that my mother filled it out before she died. It gave there were questions between my siblings and I on what she wanted done and who she wanted to do what and what have you, and all we needed to do is access that book, and it laid it right out, you know. Mm-hmm. And it kept the fights at bay. You know?
right. Yeah, because we all act out of a kind of urgency in our emotions in those few days, in that immediacy of it. It's
right.
Not everybody has a long journey to, you know, to start working on their grief and to start getting this from a person. Yeah, I think it's a huge gift to the people who are left behind to have that roadmap and to feel confident that they're doing, this is what she wanted, so this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, it really is. This is not, it makes you, you know, it gives you, exactly, it gives you the confidence, because otherwise it's like, is that what she wants or is that what I want, you know, and having to figure that all out. Who am I really honoring here? And you can know that you're honoring that person who filled out my final wishes.
Mm-hmm.
Or any, you know. Before she filled out the my final wishes, she also, we found after the fact, she actually had a one-page instruction sheet that we found in her files, but she forgot to tell anyone about it. Of what she wanted, but luckily it was pretty much the same thing as what she filled out later in My Final Wishes. So, but anyways, you know, she was thinking about it, and that's good.
What I'm hearing is filling out that final wish book is a real act of love for the family.
Right.
And grief is the price we pay for love, and grief kind of muddles up your thinking process.
Right.
So that that book would be very important. Mm-hmm. I need one.
Yeah. Well, we got one for you, gal. Yeah. You know, one thing that we haven't really talked about, and that is what green burial is.
Good point, Kelly.
Yeah. And so I just wanted to, it's very, very simple. It's a burial with very little intervention. So body, so there's no embalming. There's you're buried in a simple container, like a wooden casket, a pine casket, or shroud, and the burial depth is more shallow than a conventional grave, which is between 6 and 5, and a green burial. Burial is a grave is more like 3.5 to 4 feet. The body sits on the ground at 3.5 or 4 feet. And help me out, guys. What else?
And that helps the aerobic
decomposition.
Yeah. Yes, that helps. That's where all the activity is happening in the soil. Mm-hmm. And so it's a depth that allows for rapid decomposition.
Mm-hmm. Which the soil is more active there. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more life.
Right.
At that depth. Right. If you go any deeper, there's not as much activity. So the decomposition would be anaerobic.
Mm-hmm. Anaerobic. And then there's like a platform, or at least that.
Right. There's like a burial board. Mm-hmm. If you're being shrouded, if the body's shrouded, there's a burial board mm-hmm. that's used to move the body and to lower the body into the grave. Lots of times, families help with the filling in of the grave. That's been known to be very therapeutic for families moving through grief. Then there's other ways that family, you know, there's lots of times there's a processional because usually, well, in green burial cemeteries, there's not a lot of vehicle activity. So usually there's a procession of burying or carrying the body from where the people can park to where the grave is. Different sites have different regulations on that, but I think you can talk more, Gail, on what the regulations would be for.
Well, it's a little bit early to identify all the regulations, but as far as transferring the body from the hearse to the burial site, I think we're going to need some kind of a cart.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. if it's a shrouded body, they're not. I'd assume they're not as easy to carry as a casketed body.
It depends on with that burial,
Board or a board
when they right. have that. We've used that before carrying a body to the site, and it depends on the
how strong the people are carrying
the
body.
Yeah, who's mm-hmm. available to carry mm-hmm. the body too. Mm-hmm. And so if there is some kind of a cart, it would probably, it's a very low impact cart.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And people, you have to keep in mind that some families don't have 7 able-bodied
right.
people to help with the lowering. So we have to be prepared mm-hmm. for any and all circumstances.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, right now I'm seeking out a used lowering device
mm-hmm.
for families that some people just don't have families anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of sad. So, you know, the cemetery staff has to be willing to step in and help out.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something I hadn't thought about. In our large family, there were always, the next rung down, the nephews or
Yeah, that's always a luxury a lot of families don't have anymore.
Exactly. I can see that, yeah.
That's where community comes in, you know, if you can if you can find
right
the members to do that.
Yeah,
members.
As what I'm seeing in like my daughter's age in the mid-30s, they're living away from families for one, and right. and so they are establishing circles of friends that are like their families mm-hmm. that really are taking that place. So it's another trend that's kind of going.
Yeah, family of choice.
Yeah, family yeah. of choice, right. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting to watch all that. Mm-hmm. Well, we've covered a lot.
Yeah.
Is there any, we're kind of coming up to the end of the hour. Is there something more? We have about 5 minutes or so.
I think the one other thing that I get asked quite a bit, Gail, is, you know, we kind of touched on it, and that is how much is it going to cost?
Okay, that's what I was thinking about, too. Like you said earlier, a lot of these costs in other areas are very high. We will be a little higher than a conventional burial, but probably not very much, because I plan on keeping the lot sizes wider. When a vault is used, you can bury one person tight against the other with no fear of encroaching on their mm-hmm. present burial, where in a green burial, you don't want to take that risk. So mm-hmm. We will mark the plots out really well, but we will keep them wider so that we don't encroach on another site.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing more disturbing when you're digging a grave site and you find a pine box that was there 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we have had that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, everything stayed intact, but we don't want that risk in the future. So just by making them a foot or two wider, instead of 4 feet, it'll be 5 or 6 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
We can safeguard that. And that is mainly out of the respect to the people that are buried there.
Mm-hmm. But the cost would be, I mean, you also don't have to have the vault and the expensive casket.
The overall cost, I'm sure, will be a little lower.
Mm-hmm.
But the people I've talked to about green burial, that's usually the last question that comes up. They're doing this for other reasons, not totally for cost savings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's for environmental reasons. But I have to say that around here, we have had quite a few people ask what the cost is going to be. And right now, your conventional costs are...
They're going to be $800 the first of the year.
Right. And so it won't be that low, but it won't be that much higher.
Yeah, it won't be $1,000 or anything like that.
Right, which is a third of what it costs around the country. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, our burial fees are very low in this part of the country. I think they average like over $2,500 nationwide.
And a person could purchase a plot, right, and start taking care of that cost. You don't have to...
Well, hopefully in the next month or two, we will be at that point
mm-hmm.
because we have requests already that people want to purchase a plot,
mm-hmm.
and I don't have that mechanism all put together yet,
sure.
but that's high on my list.
Mm-hmm.
And bear in mind, they'll be purchasing the right to be buried in the green cemetery section,
mm-hmm.
but their plot will not be identified at that time.
Okay. Okay, well, that's... thank you so much for coming and giving us all this great information. I can't think of any other particular questions that I've heard, but you are the ones who hear these concerns or questions from people. So thanks for sharing them.
And I'm getting questions from all walks of life.
Uh-huh.
You would think it would be just a younger generation who are more vocal on environmental issues that are requesting this, but it's from all peoples. Farmers who took care of their land their entire life just see this as a common sense extension to their land stewardship.
Mm-hmm.
It's their legacy.
Yes.
So, you know, It's kind of like recycling. What was old is now new again.
Right, yeah.
When I started recycling in the 70s, my dad just laughed because he lived through the Depression. He knew how to recycle.
Yeah, my grandpa did too. Yep. He'd never throw out a tin can.
That's
right.
Didn't
let the family even buy one unless they really needed one. I mean, they were really worked on getting rural electrification as a co-op because wow. They didn't have it. So, wow. Yeah, I heard a lot about those stories at the time.
Thank you for having us, Mary.
Yeah.
We always welcome the opportunity to talk about Green Burial.
Okay. So anybody else out there who wants to have them as a guest? It's something like a Rotary meeting, probably, or whatever, you know? I mean, there are these places where people can need people to talk. Yes. So thanks again, Gail and Kathy and Kelly, for coming today.
Sure.
Really appreciate
Thank you, Mary.
It. Mm-hmm.